love daylight savings.
I don't need daylight savings to drink for a fucking while. It's dark. It's light. I don't care. I'm drinking.
It's got to be dark. It's because it's the after dark.
On brand. Mm. Bring the hashtag, motherfuckers.
I'm drinking a lovely Tasmanian whiskey that I got for my birthday.
Oh, did you get that fucking book that First Dog on the Moon and John Kadelka wrote about drinking Tasmanian whiskey?
Why I didn't get that book is because then I would want to spend all the money on the whiskeys. But this is very nice. It's whiskey and they finish it in Pinot barrels. And it has this real red wine.
What's the name of the joint?
Oh, I don't know. It's inside.
It's probably – I heard of that fucking rings a bell, I think – this whiskey tour though they did, because they did it on fucking electric bikes, so they're pedaling like buggery and then they were drinking fucking whiskey at the end. You think you'd drink something a bit more refreshing, but yeah, the finishing the whiskey in the Pinot barrel thing sounds familiar. It might be a regular trick that they all do, but.
And like I normally write like really really peaty whiskeys, and I did get a
you
bottle
basically
of-
like rubbing dirt in your face.
Yes, that's right. I did get a bottle of that as well. I got three different whiskeys for my birthday. I was very happy. It's like 12 months supply.
Your lawnmower's going to be delighted.
Yes, that's right. It's never going to run so smooth. But, yeah, this stuff is very different but extremely enjoyable.
So what's the tonality of it? You're going to use your big words. What are they?
No, I'm way past using big words. It's just got a –
use your describing album words, because basically what we do is like wine taste. No, seriously, I was thinking about this. Like we're just trying to think of words to describe things. And
what you do, maybe. I just go, no, I don't like this. It's shit.
Yeah, but that's also wine tasting. I mean, it's like this tastes like ass. Because when Adam was on the pod last week, he was saying it was a bit – I don't know whether frustrated is the right word, but he noticed that all the words he was going to use to describe the album that he was listening to had been used by us the week before to talk about the album that we'd listened to then. And it just so happened that the albums had commonality in them in terms of their tone, their influences, I suppose you'd say. But it's like, well, there's a limited number of words you can use. That's just, you know, we haven't thought of any new ones. Just make them up.
Yeah, I think it's a richness to it. Like, I only like whiskeys that have that real smoky flavor, and this doesn't have much smoke to it at all. But it's got a real sort of, almost like a Shiraz. It's not like a Pinot undertone. It's like a Shiraz undertone.
It's sort of really tanniny.
Yeah, and it's such a different taste with the whiskey. It's beautiful. The only problem is, you know, I'll get addicted to it and then I have to drop $80 a bottle on some fucking rare Tasmanian whiskey. But
Or do a lot of commuting to get it from the cellar door.
Yeah, that's right.
Speaking of cellar door, your correspondent is drinking I drink a lot of – on the weekends I generally drink Emerson's Brewers Reserve, which is whatever they have at Emerson's Brewery on tap. So they sell – the experimental stuff that they're working on at their cellar door, which is a really cool spot. They sell them in basically you pick up a 1.3 liter rigger, which is like a brown plastic bottle for like $10. And what I'm drinking at the moment is their Vienna Lager, which is kind of a Heller's kind of lager, but a little bit hoppier than probably a genuine fucking Heller's a Munich lager. And it's really good, but given that I've been drinking heavily, it could be terrible, and I wouldn't give a fuck. It's the after dark, folks.
The
only reason we do this is because we love you, and we love
you. That's right. We're only doing it for you, gentle listener. Yes. Otherwise, we would be clean, sober, upstanding members of society. Anyway. Yes, I should not be drinking after last weekend, but
this is the lowest alcohol
here I am.
Consumed all day.
Now I think let's talk about some of these albums because I think
let's do that. This is After Dark episode 118. We've done this 118 times. Wither my liver, and we're talking about a couple of albums that Bezo picked that were new. Because every week, if you're new to this part of the podcast, we're normally a sports podcast, but we have this kind of addendum, which is now bigger than the original podcast, where we review a couple of new albums and we also talk about a classic that one of us has nominated, and we alternate between picking new albums and the classic. So this time around, Bezo picked a couple of new albums and I nominated a classic. Bezo, do you want to talk about the classic album that you picked for this week? So in Radio Voice, you didn't pick the classic album.
You picked the classic
album. Well, we could argue that they're classic then, you know.
Okay, so I think...
Define classic. It could be a classic in a week. Sure, why not?
This is an elaborate payback for me ragging on Oasis for fucking 2 years.
So what are we talking about?
Charlie Bliss.
Okay, so Charlie Bliss. How did we come to Charlie Bliss?
Recommended to us from one of the fine hosts of New Zealand's greatest political podcast.
Which we can't remember the name of. At the drive-thru, formerly The Economist, Dan and Dave, who do fantastic work talking about something that nobody else really wants to hear about, which is New Zealand politics, and also world politics and all kinds of politics, and occasionally... quite often fast music. Food, and at the end of every year, music. But their music takes are usually terrible, which is why we have our podcast.
Which is like I really should have paid more attention to, because Dan sent me a tweet saying, you should try this album.
No, he said, he sent it to both of us and said,
yeah,
I reckon this album, and he said, it's called Charlie Bliss. I think you guys will like this. He was sincere.
Yes, it definitely looked that way. But having listened to the album, I don't know whether he was.
I think he was.
He's winding me up. This is a terrible album. I did not enjoy this album at all.
You have been drunk for a week.
That's quite possible.
So this band apparently grew up wanting to be Veruca Salt, and they have spent a lot of time. Supporting Veruca Salt, and I think they supported Slater Kinney. That's kind of how they profile, is they are trying to be Veruca Salt. The single reason you don't like this band is because the lead vocalist sounds like she's just got off a gig being the Alvin's love interest from the Chipmunk movies.
Jeez, it's terrible, that vocal.
That's pretty much it, isn't it? It's the fact that she's on helium.
But the thing is that...
And it's fucking hard to get past. It is fucking hard to get past that vocal.
But
I managed to because I'm dedicated. You didn't.
The sound of the music,
because you were drunk this week.
The sound of the music, though, reminds me a lot of a band that used to play at the Alley a lot, which is Brindle, except Deb had a much, much better vocal. It was sort of like a Chrissy Amphlett sort of vocal.
Oh, that would work.
But married with this sort of music, and it worked perfectly. It was fucking ace. And I'm listening to this going, fuck, I wish I still had some Brindle recordings, because I go back and listen to those. It's so much better than this. Her vocal is terrible.
The songs in this
terrible.
Are
terrible.
I don't have that same reaction to the vocal, because I'm not as shallow as you. I would point out the fact that you listen to a lot of Australian hip-hop, and the vocal on that is Australian hip-hop.
But I have problems with Australian hip hop.
You have a problem with everything. I mean, and I have to listen to your voice every week, and it is nasal Australian garbage. I mean, it's like listening to Russell Coyne out here. I always find it really funny that you rag on people for their vocals when our podcast sounds like the worst thing, like an explosion in a nasal factory between you and I.
You're the one that sings, though, not me.
I know, but that's not a bug. That's a feature.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Yeah.
So, no, I mean, musically, if you put aside the vocals, which is hard for you.
Yeah. For anyone.
Because it's not hard for anybody else. It's only hard for you. That's the point.
The vocals are fairly...
How many albums have Oasis fucking sold? Everyone else in the world could put the vocals aside except you.
Look, Taylor Swift has sold a lot of albums. That's not necessarily
No, what it means is that they've sold a lot of albums. So a lot of people have bought the albums. So a lot of people have been able to say, I like this.
I'm not denying that other people should like this music. I just don't think it's very good. I think there's better versions of this sort of music out there.
Yeah, but they're old. I mean, so when Dan recommended this, I kind of was hoping it was a kind of a secret Gallagher side project. Like it was like it was secretly a fucking Liam or Noel. I was really hoping it was like we'd dig deep enough and it would be like somewhere there'd be like Noel involved. It'd be like being Rick Noel'd. But no, it profiles a bunch of kids who grew up wanting to be Veruca Salt and they played alongside them. The problem is that I have, as a person who likes this sort of music, and I'll be really interested to see, because if Dan has found this album, it's a fair chance that Dave from Drive Thru Pod has found this album. Dave, like me, is a big fan of Veruca Salt. These guys profile as being salty. Salt adjacent, if you like. I'll be interested to see what his feels are on the album. But my feeling is that they're less Veruca Salt and more Sixpence None the fucking Richer. You know, they sound like they're trying to make a theme song for a 90s teen drama that we haven't watched yet. It sort of feels... It just felt a little like chintzy and poppy, and that Alvin and the Chipmunks female love interest lead vocal is... It takes getting over. And some people made it and some people didn't. But there are some good songs on this album. I would have said they probably sound more Breeders than Veruca Salt or Slater Kinney, because they've been if you look them up on the net and you look at their profile and you look at reviews and they all go, they sound like Veruca Salt, they sound like Slater Kinney. They don't. They sound more like the Breeders or somebody.
Yeah, the Breeders is a good analogy, musically.
Except, anyway, except.
Yeah, that vocal is like a buzzsaw, man. It's terrible.
It is. You listen to Australian hip hop, man.
Yeah.
I mean, people make bad noises with their voices all the time.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway.
I'm not going to pretend it's not a problem.
So
I can deal with it. So I think I don't feel like we were being trolled with this pick, and I think that you are acting in incredibly bad faith to our friends at Drive Thru Pod by reacting. It's like
I'm trying to reverse troll Dan just by winding him up. Okay, let's talk about Grand Royal. Because you
Let's talk
are
about
the
Grand
man.
Royale, because this is a pick from your I've suddenly become from the north of England. A pick from your Discover Weekly, from a Scandinavian rock and roll band.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why they didn't turn up on my Discover Weekly, considering I listened to the sorts of bands that predicated these guys that came before them.
You're the guy that has the knowledge and the background and the, you know, entomology to be able to say
entomology is the study of insects, dude, but that's also cool.
I can't. I'll have to look that up.
That means you really understand the Beatles. Hey yo!
Oh god! So straight away, the first two songs I got that real mid '70s British rock and roll feel.
Yes,
is that right? Is that T-Rex sort of?
Yeah. And we reviewed an album that was trying to do this last week called White Reaper, whose album was called the World's Greatest American Band. And they were going for more of like a kind of a saccharine American kind of approach. These guys sound like very classic rock, very 70s, particularly with production choices, to the point where I went, Swedish band, very 70s classic rock production choices. Let me look up who's producing this. And I looked it up. It was a fellow called Nicke Andersson. Nicke Andersson was the lead singer for a band called The Helicopters, who were part of the new rock thing that exploded in the late 90s, early noughts. They were kind of... they weren't as big as the Hives, who were also part of that scene. But
they played that classic Livid.
They were one of the headliner acts on the punk stage at Livid. But later in they started out as the garage punk kind of thundering fucking MC5 Stooges style hairy ass riffs. But as their albums developed, particularly their sort of 02-05 albums. They develop more of a classic rock kind of sound. The sound got cleaner, and like Adam talked about last week, there was that kind of cardboard box tom sound. The production choices sort of trended, and that was kind of how they differentiated themselves, particularly the last album, which was called Rock and Roll is Dead. The production on this feels a lot like the production on that, so it kind of – they fit into a line of kind of Swedish rock and roll bands. All of that is very niche, and I keep hitting the microphone with my hand while I'm trying to gesture when no one can actually see me gesturing, which indicates I've probably been drinking too much. I like the songs on this. I would have liked it a bit more hairy-assed, but that's just my particular kind of sound. They're considerably better at making a throwback 70s album than White Reaper were. To the point where I literally my only note for improvement is more cowbell. Which I think is totally appropriate. Particularly track two. Track two makes you feel like you should be banging a cowbell.
Yeah, that's my favorite song, Bray. Like, in fact, there's an incredibly unnecessary and over the top drum fill like a third of the way through. Like not even in the back end of the song, but a third of the way through Brake Light, and it just made me laugh. This is hilarious. This is so fucking funny. I enjoyed the hell out of this album, and it made me think that it's funny how I didn't really like a lot of this older style music in period, but you know, Black Mountain and this, you know, a lot of this sort of throwback sort of
reinvention music,
interpretation stuff I'm really, really enjoying as I get older. Which might just be a function of sort of, you know, my mind having been expanded, or my musical taste having been expanded a little bit.
Just smoking from a lot of weed. It's also...
Yeah, that's true.
These guys aren't throwing directly back to, like, fucking Detroit 1973. They're throwing back to, like, fucking Sweden 2002, who was throwing back to. So it's kind of...
There's it's a like couple a progression.
Of, yeah, it's a reinterpretation of a reinterpretation. So it's... And I thought this was really, really well done and really effectively. There can be misfires when you try and do this kind of, when you're aiming for a sound that has been done before. And like we pretty much picked up last week with White Reaper. But this landed. You wouldn't call it, the greatest or most incisive piece of art in the history of the universe, but.
No, but it's a lot of fucking fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
I enjoyed Charlie Bliss more than you, but I enjoyed both these albums.
Yeah, well, I listened to Charlie Bliss and this back to back today, and was so happy to hear that first riff on Know It All. So much fun. Good album. So, the Arctic Monkeys.
So, did you hate this because of the vocals? The best part is that I can hear crickets in the background, and that's almost right. That is perfect.
I think hate's too strong a word. I didn't
because that was a first reaction.
I didn't love it.
I listened to this album a lot, and I thought is Bezo just going to go, this sounds like Liam Gallagher? I mean, this is, I mean, me, Sheffield doesn't sound like fucking Manchester. And the Alex, what's his name's album? Alex Turner? I can't remember his last name. His vocal doesn't, he's a better singer than Liam Gallagher for the same kind of northern accent.
It's a bit raw for me. Mm. I think it got better as the album went on. I agree with you with the lyrics. I actually went and read the lyrics while I listened to the music, and they are piss.
You did the karaoke version. The God of the Bouncing
Ball version. I did the karaoke version, and I agree. Like it definitely adds to the album.
He's almost got, you'd almost say in a hip hop sense, he's got bars, you know, the way he describes
it's very clever. It's very, I don't know whether satirical is the right word,
yeah,
but
I think satirical. It's observational at the very least. Yeah. It reminded me a little bit. I didn't like Mike Skinner, but it reminded me a little bit of Mike Skinner's work with the Streets, which is Mike Skinner basically, was that he was able to describe like vignettes from fucking being out in the piss in England in nasty pubs and all the rest of it. And you felt like you were there. You could totally put yourself in that space. And what I really love about the lyrics on this album is that you feel like you're there. You could be in the right van, you know, as the fucking coppers kick in this dickhead who's fucking wound them up all night. Or, you know, you understand totally the aspect of the aspect of the protagonist. So as a fucking English student who never made it past high school because, fuck, nobody, you'd never get a job if you go to university and do the humanities. So I went and did science instead. It's just a fascinating study in humanity, I think, even before you get to
music. It reminded me of, lyrically, it reminded me of Format. You know, that same self-deprecating, you know,
observational.
Very, very clever. Almost like if Will Anderson decided that he was going to do fucking, you know, hip hop or something.
But very much in the voice of Northern England, that kind of sarcastic, very unique kind of voice.
Yeah, like right, Van just cracked me up. The whole thing is The thing was that I really found the lyrics interesting.
Right, man. The coppers kicked him in.
But the music just didn't grab me enough to make me want to sort of sit there and do the karaoke thing with it. Like I didn't the music didn't grab me enough to go back and sort of like hum the songs, you know, away from listening to the music. I just don't think it's the sort of stuff that really grabs me. But I really appreciated the craft that went into it, I guess.
The context for this album is that, I mean, as you pointed out, they were kind of internet heroes, and they came up as kind of a northern response to the art rock bands of the early to middle noughts, you know, your Franz Ferdinands, your Block Parties, your like Kasabians, your fucking Interpols. That sort of bunch, who were generally bands from London or from the South, very know-it-all, university-educated. And these guys were much more just thundering pisshounds from the North. And it's a much more sort of hairy-assed northern take on that kind of jangly art rock of the mid-zeros and the mid-noughts. And I like it for that. I like the it's almost punky. It's not punk rock, but it's much punkier than I mean, if you think of, I mean, Franz Ferdinand's first album is a really good album, but you feel like it's produced to within an inch of its life, whereas this feels like if you rocked up to watch them, they would produce the same thing note for note.
Now, the other interesting thing about this album, and I hadn't really thought about it until you put it up there, was I used to go and have fairly regular meetings with a mate of mine who's now pretty much runs EMI Australia. And we were just, I basically relied on him to give me industry knowledge because I just, you know, I was a baby in the woods, you know, I was a very, very, very small fish swimming in a pretty large pond at that stage. And trying to become a bigger fish. And I remember talking about the way that these guys marketed themselves and brought themselves into being a big music act, yeah. because at that stage, no one had ever fucking done this. Yeah. You know, they were the first,
and probably the only, because since then the game has fragmented massively. I mean, you couldn't do what they did in 2005 now because it's a different game entirely.
Well, actually, I was thinking about your discussion last week with Adam about the greatest American band going around, and my suggestion for that was Chance the Rapper, who doesn't sell any music and tours relentlessly. Like, he tours more than those legacy acts, you know, the Foo Fighters and the Metallicas, yeah, like that.
It was a band question because
– I mean, with the understanding
that bands aren't really a thing, and that's why it's an interesting question.
Mm.
I mean, there's plenty of solo acts. I mean, if you look at the biggest selling – if you just look at the artists that sold the most albums, it's all solo acts. It's not bands. Mm. It's fucking Kanye and Kendrick and – well, not Kendrick so much, but
– But Chance the Rapper is like the – he's like the philosophical successor to the Arctic Monkeys, because he, you know, he doesn't sell albums. He sells tours and T-shirts and merchandise, and, you know, he basically goes – you know, he is like the ultimate subversion of that record company paradigm, which sort of started with these guys, I think. Yeah, I think they were the first ones to try and do something – completely out of the fucking ordinary because
they were unsigned in fucking Sheffield, which is terrible. Mm. I know a good mate of mine did his postdoc in Sheffield, and I'm sure it was better for him because he was getting paid and he was working at the university. But it's rough up north. Like, it's a bit of a mess. So it was kind of, and these guys were fairly fresh out of school when they were super young at the time. And it needs to be said, they've never really done anything anywhere near as powerful or insightful or vibrant. They've slowly disappeared up their own ass. They're still recording, but they're not the force they were. This was the fastest selling debut album by any British artist when it came out. So it took the record off Oasis, I think. So it took definitely Maybe's record away. I think it's subsequently gone to somebody else, but it was a significant fucking effort. They are not a significant band anymore, which is unfortunate. So you can't. It's better to have one great achievement rather than just be mediocre for the rest of your careers. Speaking of which, you two have a new album.
Yeah, I've been tossing up whether
that's not me picking a new album. That's just me making an observation.
No, I like U2. I still have a very, you know, I have a certain fondness for their catalog before.
They turned up on my fucking Spotify most played albums of the year. I don't know if you've looked at yours, but it was fucking Beastie Boys, U2, Friends or Rom.
Mine is completely warped because we have a playlist of 30 songs that plays for the boys when they go to sleep every night, and it plays three times every night. And it's like, okay, so these Jugging 30 songs of it. No, it's like, there's some basics. What else is there in that sleepy playlist?
I have a playlist that's called Go the Fuck to Sleep, You Bastards. So when they get older, you just shout at them and it's awful.
Well, it's some Nancy Sinatra. There's some Roy Scop. Salmonella Dub, Portishead, Massive Attack, Wicked Beat Sound System, Jungle, Cake, Stereo MCs, Ugly Duckling, and the Dub Pistols.
You know what's cool?
Mm-hmm.
My 10-year-old, I just
put Spotify onto
his computer that he normally uses, and I found him uninvitedly listening to Black Sabbath
Did you cry a couple of tears of joy?
No, but I'm going to point out to him, just keep doing this for a while and then there'll be then they'll start sending you playlists to listen to other stuff. And you can just have your own. And what I'm really fighting is the urge to say, try this and this and this and this. I just want him to go, explore. I just want him to go out and learn because it was one of the one of the best experiences you can have is exploring music and finding shit that you like. And you deserve to have the right to just do that on your own and just find what you can find. And in this current Spotify era, you can do that. And it's fucking awesome.
I had a bet with my year 8 English teacher that I could read 100 novels in a year. And
well, you lost that bet by taking it because you were – I mean, you lost that bet by taking it. You got plugged.
No, I liked reading. It was a good challenge. But so the thing is, though, that you – like, you know, I had a list of authors that I liked, but it was a pretty – you know, I'm only year 8. It was a pretty small list. But I had this fucking kick-ass librarian who was like, you know, like Spotify Discover Weekly for
– if you like this, try this. Yeah,
awesome. Yeah, so he introduced me to Pratchett and there was another author. But basically I would just rock on down to the library and go, okay, I've read all of this author. Where do I go
who's
next?
Who's like
and,
that? Yeah.
Yeah, and she introduced me to – she's like, I'll try Stephen King. And I think I punched out – I've still got the list. I think I punched out 132 novels in a school year, which is not a bad achievement.
No, that's – well, you did that instead of studying for your HSC.
Yeah, yeah. It's
I know that feeling because I've read all the Ian Fleming Bond books and all Len Deighton and all fucking John Le Carre and Robert – I was big on fucking spy thrillers, so I just read shitloads of spy thrillers instead of fucking studying for my HSC.
I did – Alistair MacLean and who's the guy that did
Robert Ludlum?
No, I don't think it was Ludlum.
Yeah, he was the original. He was originated behind Bourne, and he was shit house. I read one of his books and it gave up halfway through. I didn't give up. I quit and skipped to the end, and realized by reading the last 100 pages that it was as dumb as shit. And I'd made the best decision of my life not to fucking read the intermediate 300 pages.
And it wasn't Le Carre because I got into him fairly late.
Yeah, you know Le Carre because he would have depressed you immensely.
Yeah, I know. But I actually, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is one of my favourite novels. It's just brilliant in its sort of British understatedness. Oh, Alistair MacLean was the other one.
I preferred Len Deighton stuff because it had a little bit more because the protagonists were first person and they tried to carry their working class humour.
Who wrote The Jackal?
Frederick Forsyth. So I read off Freddie Forsyth.
Yeah, that was so yeah, that, the Jackal, that was the other.
And he wrote
The Fourth Protocol. And,
yes, The Negotiator. He wrote all those ones. He's horribly fucking right wing. Like he is.
But fucking, I didn't know that when I was in year 8.
Well, the plot to the Fourth Protocol was that the Soviets were going to try and take over in England by the Labour Party and putting a communist in. And it was basically – there was that whole section that didn't make it into the movie that was all basically just ragging on the British Labour Party for being a way that the communist Russia could take over England.
But anyway,
I can't imagine what he thinks of Jeremy Corbyn, but it can't be that good.
I was reading like a novel every – at one stage, I was reading sort of one every day and a half, and I went through a Stephen King phase where I never liked Stephen King.
I just never. He spent a lot of pages just doing stuff.
The quality varies, but I read like 15 in a row of these fucking Stephen King novels, and there was one that had this like fluoro green the letters on the title of the book. Well, like this fluoro green, and the light used to shine through the window. The street lights used to shine through the window in my room, and so I'm halfway through this novel, and it was quite, you know, they're horror novels, and I woke up one night and I looked over, and this book is fucking glowing, and I just
shat yourself,
fuck out, and I just went right. I think I'm going to go and read something that's a little bit more lighthearted
spy novels for a while.
But yeah, I'll have to see if I can pull that out somewhere, and you know, it's all fucking handwritten of my 130 novels I read in year 8, but it was a good list.
Well, lots of- I don't know whether what it's like now, but in those days, the secondhand bookstore was your friend, and I managed to end up owning every one of the Ian Fleming James Bond books because I was a big Bond fan as a kid. Of course, when we were kids, there'd be a Bond film on every Saturday night, either on 7 or 10, or the local affiliates.
I think even ABC ran them for a while because I can
know,
remember.
I watched Live and Let Die at least 5 times.
Yeah.
And it doesn't date well. It is problematic as fuck, but it's still funny as shit as well.
It's hilarious.
The Cletus Sheriff is still incredibly funny.
Yep.
Even if his cousin Billy Bob has the fastest boat in the whole bayou.
All right, Doc, what do you got for me that's new? Our last new album.
We will have the last pair of new albums. I think we need a drum roll for this. Only because I need some time to fill while I flip to the part of the
book. I've already filled for you once tonight when we went and got a beer. Glass fill.
It's a band that I've been keeping my eye on for a bit. A British band called The Warbly Jets.
God.
Warbly, as in warbling. Jets, and they are a band that does that sort of stuff. They're good, I think. Or they're terrible. One of the two. It might be an elaborate trial. This might be another fucking... it might be Oasis. It might be a Gallagher side project. You might be getting Rick Nold. The other band
There is a Noel Gallagher side project.
Of course there is. Fucking tuck the head and fuck off. I got one of his songs on my fucking Discover Weekly.
Yes, so did
it. It was awful. It was really bad.
I was not happy. I actually tweeted at Spotify. I'm like, what the fuck are you guys doing to me?
My release radar this week is absolute shit house. It's fucking toilet. I thought about picking BNQT, which is like a super group of a lot of those kind of British art rock bands of the mid-aughts, like fucking Arctic Monkeys, Franz Ferdinand, Band of Horses. So I'll mention that album. I'm not going to pick it, but I'm just going to mention it so people know that it exists. You might want to go and listen to that. This week, we're not going to listen to that. We're going to listen to a band called Honeymoon Disease, who are, because we seem to like that sort of stuff, Scandinavian rock band. Because Scandinavia is where the rock and roll
is. In our wheelhouse.
They have not given up. They've got the lighter aloft. They've got the fucking horns. They are giving it heaps for rock and roll. And I respect Scandinavia, and I want to reward them with one last shot. Because, I mean, let's go back to fucking Satan Takes a Holiday. It's been a good year for Scandinavian rock on the Balls podcast.
Until the trip hopper revival starts in Central Africa, I think Scandinavian rock is going to be our...
Scandinavian garage rock is basically the salvation of the sound. But I thought we'll give that one more crack because I did. And then also... I think it's either a girl band or at least it's a female led band. So that makes us marginally less misogynist than we were 5 minutes ago.
Well, for our last classic of the year, I'm going to make everyone work a little bit harder because this album is not on Spotify.
Oh, it's so just listening to it.
Well, I'm hoping that you own it. I assume that you do own it, but I'm not entirely sure. And that's Tool's Anima.
No, because Tool.
No.
Why would I own Tool?
I like this album. I really like this album.
It's miserable shit.
Yeah, of course it's miserable. I like miserable.
I don't.
I know.
I have mental illness. Why the fuck would I want to be miserable on purpose?
I've got a really strong memory of listening to the singles off this album and going, fuck, I've never heard anything like this before. And that's mainly because I was sheltered, I guess, musically at that stage. But, yeah, I've been kicking this one around for a while, so I'm going to drop that in for the classic.
So Tool don't have their stuff on Spotify, I understand.
I don't even think it's on iTunes, mate. I'm gonna have to DM.
I think I saw a Perfect Circle had a new single that was on my Shit You Might Have Missed playlist. So A Perfect Circle have probably got plans to put out a new album, but not so much Tool.
Yeah, Tool aren't even on iTunes, so I will.
Congratulations on picking a classic album that nobody can hear, unless they've already bought it.
That's right.
Let me know how that works out.
I'm sure Adam has Tool in his extensive CD collection.
Well, he can listen to it and he can tell you what it sounds like.
That's true. All right, Doc. It was a pleasure.
It apparently.
The lawnmower fuel is going down very nicely.
I've run out of beer. This is me. That's me running out of beer. So end of the podcast.
See you, Doc.
Good night, people. And as the microphone squeaks, the young girl's telephone beeps. Yeah, she's dashing for the exit. Oh, she's running to the streets outside. Oh, you saved me, she screams down the line. The band will fucking wank and I'm not having a nice time. I don't want to hear you. Kick me out, kick me out. I don't want to hear you, no. Amazing though, so all that's left is the proof that love's not only blind but deaf.